This episode is brought to you by Glorify, the number one Christian daily devotional app. Everything around us changes. God doesn't. That's why I love Glorify's 21-day challenge. It helps me build a simple habit of meeting with God every day. No pressure, just consistency. With Glorify, you can start your morning by reading the Bible passage of the day, diving into Glorify's daily devotional, and wrapping up with an immersive experience called Daily Walk with God. And if you need to take a few minutes to yourself in the middle of a busy day, try one of Glorify's guided meditations or listen to their curated worship playlists for some quiet reflection. To end the day, enjoy Glorify's sleep meditations to help you wind down and put your mind and heart at ease. Whether you're a committed Christian or simply curious about faith, Glorify has something for you. Join over 20 million people who have downloaded the Glorify app and deepened their relationship with God. Listeners to the show can get full access to Glorify for just $29.99 for the entire year. That's Glorify's lowest price ever when you download the Glorify app now at glorify-app.com/redcircle. Feel closer to God this year with Glorify. Get full access all year for just $29.99 at glorify-app.com/redcircle. That's glorify-app.com/redcircle.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. State politicians in Louisiana, Texas, Arkansas, and elsewhere believe they have the power, the right, to use the machinery of the state to impose that religious doctrine on other people's children. They do not. They do not have that right. They do not have that power. But later today, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, January 20th, 2026, the entire Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the entire court en banc, is going to hear oral argument in two cases, Reverend Roque v. Brumley, the Louisiana Ten Commandments case, and Rabbi Nathan v. Alamo Heights Independent School District, one of the Texas Ten Commandments cases. And both of these cases are challenging laws that politicians in those respective states passed to display their version, a version of the Ten Commandments that doesn't exist in the Bible, but they wrote themselves, in every public school classroom. Now, en banc means the entire court, all of the judges on the Fifth Circuit are going to consider the case. Back in June, a three-judge panel, this is how appellate courts normally rule on cases. They have three-judge panels, not every judge. A three-judge panel of the Fifth Circuit back in June ruled in the Louisiana case unanimously that Louisiana's Ten Commandments law was, quote, plainly unconstitutional. Yeah, no shit. There have been multiple federal decisions out of courts in Texas that have blocked the enforcement of Texas's version of this Ten Commandments law because that law tramples the religious freedom of students and usurps the family's role in religious education. There are actually 75 plaintiffs spread across these two cases. So you've got 34 parents, 41 children from 24 families. Nine of those parents are practicing clergy. There are kids as young as 4, all the way up to high school age. It's a religiously diverse group. You've got Christians from various denominations and non-denominations. You have Jews, Hindus, Unitarian Universalists, and of course, you have plenty of non-religious folks. And these are just the two cases that the court is going to hear argument in today. There are other cases in Texas, including a class action and a case in Arkansas. And again, with more brave folks challenging these unpopular laws. And the entire court heard argument in those two cases today. So all the judges on the Fifth Circuit en banc. And let's just talk about the law here. And let's dive into the Ten Commandments. Because if you listen to the other side, their justification for these laws is that the Ten Commandments are the founding documents of this country. Right? Or maybe not quite that much. That's probably pushing it a little too far. But that the Ten Commandments influenced the founding documents of this country. That's fair. That's what they're saying. In fact, the Louisiana law quotes, or purports to quote, James Madison. The law reads, quote, "History records that James Madison, the fourth president of the United States of America, stated that, quote, we have staked the whole future of our new nation upon the capacity of each of ourselves to govern ourselves according to the moral principles of the Ten Commandments," end quote. That is fake. James Madison never said or wrote anything like that. We know it's fake. It is out there as fake. We don't know it's fake because of this law and because of the fact that it was included. We've known it was fake for a very long time. Right, this is one of David Barton's favorite quotes, the granddaddy of Christian nationalist disinformation, spread so much lies and disinfo. He helped popularize this Madison quote, but Madison's biographers, editors, scholars all agree, it is fake, it is not history, it is a lie. This law is based on a lie. The Ten Commandments had little to no influence on the founding of this country. How many times did the founders cite the Ten Commandments during the Constitutional Convention, during that conclave in Philadelphia where they actually wrote the Constitution, where they actually debated the principles on which our government is based and then put those principles down into words that we are supposed to be operating by today? How many times did the Ten Commandments, supposedly so influential, come up in that debate? Zero! Not once. Never. Because they are meaningless irrelevance, because they had little to no influence. And also, the Ten Commandments are kind of a new thing. Right? They've been in the Bible, but if you read the founding myth, you know how remarkably unclear the Bible is about the Ten Commandments. This is actually why I started writing the founding myth in the first place, was because of this claim that the Ten Commandments influenced American law. Right? There are 4 sets of Ten Commandments in any given Bible. 4. Go look. And if you want an easier way to look, go get a copy of the Founding Myth. Which 10 is the government saying we are based on? And then different religions, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, number and interpret the words of those commandments differently. And these are not minor differences. What's the difference between graven images and idols? Well, I don't fucking care. But the church had a civil war in the 8th and 9th centuries over which of those interpretations was correct. The more famous commandments in Exodus 20, the others are Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 5, and Deuteronomy 27, the more famous commandments that are famous because of Charlton Heston and Cecil B. DeMille are those that are in Exodus 20. And they are far less ethical than people realize, and I'll get to that in a second. But the Ten Commandments, you know, it's not just the fact that the Bible itself and the books of the Bible and the interpretations of the Bible and the versions of the Bible, there's all these intra-biblical, inter-biblical differences, inter-religious differences about what the Ten Commandments actually are. But these were not a big thing for a long time. Like, if you look at the Google Ngram viewer, and if you've ever played around with this tool, it's a really fun, fascinating tool. The Google Ngram, letter N-G-R-A-M, viewer, it helps us visualize the frequency of words and phrases in the English language. So you bring up the Ngram viewer, you type in search terms, words or, you know, phrases or terms, and then it plows through millions of books and plots the frequency that those phrases or words appear on a graph over time. goes back to 1800 all the way up to 2022. And so you can see linguistic trends and shifts and changes, and it's not perfect by any means, but it's definitely interesting. And if you do this, if you plot the Ten Commandments, and even, you know, I put in quotes, TEN Commandments, 10 Commandments, Decalogue, you know, if you plot those, there are shockingly, it's a shockingly low number of mentions for most of our history. And again, this is looking at English literature, American English, English, books that are written in English. There's very, very, it is not something that is mentioned very often. And the spikes are not where you would expect to see them if the Ten Commandments are so influential in American law and our founding. There are two major spikes. The first is at 1923, 1924. The second is a much bigger spike. In fact, by far the biggest spike, and that's 1957. Andrew, why then? What's the deal? I gave you a hint already. Cecil B. DeMille. In 1923, December of 1923, actually, which is why the spike is really 23, 24, DeMille released a silent movie called The Ten Commandments. And then in 1957, he released the famous version, the Charlton Heston as Moses version of the Ten Commandments. And this is where you see these huge spikes in the usage of the phrase from movies, not because it's something that is important to our morality or our law or our founding, but because of movies like PR, right? And in fact, and this is, I think, just one of the craziest facts, the Stone Commandments monuments that dot public land, right? Most of these popped up in the 1950s. They were not moral statements. They were actually part of a PR campaign for that 1957 movie, right? So Yul Brynner plays Pharaoh in the movie. He was actually in Milwaukee, just down the road here from me, for the installation of the Ten Commandments monument there, because again, this was part of a PR campaign. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation successfully lobbied to get that Ten Commandments monument moved off of government land.
This episode is brought to you by Glorify, the number one Christian daily devotional app. Everything around us changes. God doesn't. That's why I love Glorify's 21-day challenge. It helps me build a simple habit of meeting with God every day. No pressure, just consistency. With Glorify, you can start your morning by reading the Bible passage of the day, diving into Glorify's daily devotional, and wrapping up with an immersive experience called Daily Walk with God. And if you need to take a few minutes to yourself in the middle of a busy day, try one of Glorify's guided meditations or listen to their curated worship playlists for some quiet reflection. To end the day, enjoy Glorify's sleep meditations to help you wind down and put your mind and heart at ease. Whether you're a committed Christian or simply curious about faith, Glorify has something for you. Join over 20 million people who have downloaded the Glorify app and deepened their relationship with God. Listeners to the show can get full access to Glorify for just $29.99 for the entire year. That's Glorify's lowest price ever when you download the Glorify app now at glorify-app.com/redcircle. Feel closer to God this year with Glorify. Get full access all year for just $29.99 at glorify-app.com/redcircle. That's glorify-app.com/redcircle.
And before those spikes, before those movies, mentions of the Ten Commandments are negligible. And if you compare them on that same n-gram graph to other phrases that may be relevant, like murder or the Constitution, right? Those phrases have much higher frequencies to the point where the Ten Commandments look like flat lines at the bottom of the graph. They're entirely negligible, as if nobody is talking about them because they have no relevance. And you can even do this with things like put milk on there, or silk, or raccoon. They just dwarf the Ten Commandments. I mean, by orders of magnitude. And even if you cut it off at 1900 and earlier, and you try words that were not popular back then, and maybe not even concepts back then, like if you put feminism or suffragette, you still get these phrases or words that are competitive with the Ten Commandments, even before those things were real concepts. Because again, the Ten Commandments were not really that big a deal or that big a thing. Okay, Andrew, fine. But what about the criminal laws in the various states and things like that? Those laws do prohibit murder. Well, so let's take it a step further. Let's take the argument a step further. Let's talk about how the Ten Commandments fundamentally conflict with our nation's core principles. Sure, some of the Ten Commandments overlap with criminal laws that prohibit murder and theft and perjury, including laws in the state wherever you are listening to this right now. But, and this is really important. Those rules, those laws, are not exclusive or original to Christianity or Judeo-Christianity or the Bible or the Ten Commandments. Those are universal human principles that every successful society we know of has adopted. And there's actually really compelling evidence to suggest that the biblical version of those prohibitions didn't apply universally. It didn't apply to anybody but your fellow believers. In other words, the biblical version, the Ten Commandments version of these universal principles was not universal. Either way, it's very hard to credibly claim that the biblical iterations of those universal rules are what influenced our founding. And if you look at the rest of the Ten Commandments, they are downright un-American. Truly, in that they conflict with our founding principles, right? They begin, as I opened this episode, "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me." That is a divine command that embodies principles that directly conflict with the principles on which this country, the United States, was founded. No law can tell an American to worship a god, let alone which god. We are free to be godless, as a growing number of us are. Or if we want to worship that biblical God, or to worship every God from every holy book, we get to do that in this country. As long as we're not harming others, we have the freedom of worship and the freedom of thought. And the commandments really continue. They begin in this un-American vein, and they continue in this un-American vein. They prohibit free speech, free expression, and art. Right? That prohibition on graven images or idol. They prohibit free speech, taking the Lord's name in vain. They sanction slavery twice. Look up Exodus 20, 10 and 20, 17, chapter 20, verses 10, verses 17. And yeah, some of your versions are going to change that slave to servant, or maid servant, or man servant. But here's something that is very, very clear. The Ten Commandments promise to punish innocent children, quote, to the third and fourth generation. The Ten Commandments promise to punish innocent children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. That's in there. For what terrible crime is this punishment exacted down through the generations to innocent children? Well, if the parents are brazen enough to exercise the religious freedom that is guaranteed in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, their kids are punished, their grandkids are punished, their great-grand, and down and down and down. It would be difficult to write a law that is more fundamentally un-American than that. And the Tenth Commandment may even be the worst. It condones slavery, it treats women as chattel, it criminalizes thought. And our First Amendment is very, very clear. It protects six different rights, all of which are dedicated to protecting the freedom of thought. And it's also worth mentioning that those stone monuments that were part of that PR campaign that you see on public spaces, they edit out the more horrific parts that I just mentioned, as do the Ten Commandments, which these laws in Louisiana and Texas and Arkansas are trying to put up in our public schools. And just think about what a goddamn damning statement that is. We are exercising our modern morality to cut out the immoral parts of a divine law in their mind, including the mentions of slavery, including punishing innocent children, right? It's so influential on American founding that we have to change it to make it less fucking awful. We are more moral than God's most moral laws, according to those stone monuments, according to those legislatures. And I'm just going to share, because I'm recording this on Religious Freedom Day, January 16th, which celebrates the passage of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which Thomas Jefferson drafted and James Madison ushered through the legislature to become one of the first really ringing endorsements of religious freedom in the United States, what would become the United States. But Jefferson wrote a letter to James Fishback in September 1809, and I don't believe he sent this letter. I believe it's a draft. And in it, he's talking a little bit about what I was touching on at the top, about these are some of the things that religion, some of the laws and rules that religion puts down are universal human principles. And in fact, most religions, most societies, most humans agree on those universal principles, not because they're religious, not because they're divine, but because we have an innate understanding of morality that has evolved. And Thomas Jefferson writes to James Fishback, quote, "Every religion consists of moral precepts and of dogmas. In the first, they all agree. All forbid us to murder, steal, plunder, and bear false witness, etc. And these are the articles necessary for the preservation of order, justice, and happiness in society." Quote. Okay, that's what I'm trying to tell you, right? The parts of the Ten Commandments that reflect these universal principles do so because humans wrote the Ten Commandments, not because our laws are based on them. It's a confluence, not an influence of the Ten Commandments on our laws and government. And Jefferson continues, quote, "In their particular dogmas, religions all differ, no two professing the same. These respect vestments, ceremonies, physical opinions, and metaphysical speculations, totally unconnected with morality and unimportant to the legitimate objects of society. Yet these are the questions on which have hung the bitter schisms." And then I'm going to omit quite a bit of some of the bitter schisms in the different sects that he's mentioning. And he's going to go on to talk about these questions of dogmas, not the moral precepts. Quote, "It is on questions of this, and still less importance, that such oceans of human blood have been spilt, and whole regions of the earth have been desolated by wars and persecutions in which human ingenuity has been exhausted in inventing new tortures for their brethren. It is time then to become sensible to how insoluble these questions are by minds like ours, how unimportant and how mischievous, and to consign them to the sleep of death, never to be awakened from it." We don't need the Ten Commandments up in public schools. They don't belong in public schools. And it's not up to legislators to be writing or rewriting the Bible. And you would think, if they were not all fucking hypocrites, that evangelicals and MAGA and Christian nationalists would be utterly pissed off that they are rewriting their holy God's laws. You'd think that would anger them. I'm recording this before oral argument has happened, so I'm not going to speculate. We'll follow up next week on how oral argument went and what may happen. Though I will say the Fifth Circuit is one of the absolute worst in the country, full of insane judges who are trying out to be the next Sam Alito, Clarence Thomas, Christian nationalist justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. And when I say they're trying out, I mean they are outdoing each other in the absurdity and the extremity of the opinions that they are writing. I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about the fallout from the murder of Renee Good and what is happening in Minneapolis, St. Paul right now. Do have friends there, do have connections there. You all know we've had State Senator Marty on this podcast to talk about the assassination that happened there last year. The firsthand reports that we are getting out of MSP are that it is, quote, like a war zone. The Constitution is out the window. There's credible reports that they are tear gassing children and babies, throwing tear gas into cars. They are cuffing people. They are beating people. This is, in the true sense of the phrase, a reign of terror. And if we were seeing shit like this in another country, if we were seeing the head of another country invading his own city with not a police force, not a paramilitary force, a fucking goon squad that appears to be beholden and loyal to him to intimidate and terrorize and attack the populace, we would be calling for military intervention, you know, whether it's calling on the military of that country to oust the dictator, or calling on, you know, NATO to do something, or something else. And the intimidation is ratcheting up. It's getting worse. Somebody posted a photo. Actually, I apologize. I don't remember what it was. I don't remember where I read this while I was doom scrolling. Where it said that Jonathan Ross did not murder Renee Good because he was afraid, but because she was not afraid. And I think that's right. This is intimidation. And I think we might look back on the murder of Renee Good and see this as a turning point. We might. What I mean is that in response to the shooting, the administration has tried to shove these absurd lies down our throat, and the lies continue, and they continue to get worse and more obscene. The officer has internal bleeding. He's hurt, even though we all saw him in that video walk away and holster his weapon like it was no thing. They've surged of a total of something like 3,000 agents into the Twin Cities. Again, and we're hearing that it's a war zone, that the Constitution doesn't exist, was a phrase that I heard. So it's lies to cover up a murder and an abuse and a misuse of force, and then more intimidation and more force to coerce people into obedience. And neither the lies nor the intimidation seem to be working. And we're going to play a clip from the streets of Minnesota recently, and there's some salty language in it. Okay, it's not a word that I ever use, and I am, as you listeners know, want to fuck around. Do you have any idea how terrible a human being you have to be to get an entire crowd of Midwesterners chanting a song with that word in it about you? I mean, if you haven't lived here, I don't really consider myself a Midwesterner. I've lived here for a long time now, 15 years now. But you know, I'm a mid-Atlantic boy, or you know, a New Orleans kid, not kid. People here are so polite and nice for the most part, particularly in Wisconsin, but even more so in Minnesota. Do you have any idea how polite it is here? And Minnesota really is more polite than most of the Midwest. Some of the nicest people I've ever encountered are there. You have to be some kind of evil to get the good people of Minnesota to be chanting this really catchy tune about you. And it's earned. And let's just remember to sober up here for a second that all of this is happening in a state where Democratic politicians were assassinated just a few months ago, and where the governor was Trump's opponent in a political race not more than a year ago, just over a year ago. Those two things are absolutely related. And finally, let's also remember that six prosecutors quit. DOJ federal prosecutors quit because instead of investigating the murder of Renee Good, the United States Department of Justice has been trying to investigate her widow. These prosecutors quit because this is not just bullshit, but this is a disgusting abuse of power. Her wife was murdered right in front of her, and Pam Bondi is doing this. This is not justice. This is, I mean, this is nothing close to justice. And I am looking to do an episode, I think a full episode. I'm going to try to find an expert. I need to do some reading on what happened to Nazi lawyers, to the lawyers who justified the atrocities of the regime, who helped advance the, who provided that blanket, that security blanket of this is legal to all the people who were committing these crimes. Because I am beyond fed up with people of my profession letting that happen. I mean, in my mind, and I've said this so many times on the podcast, but I will say it again and many times, more times, lawyers who aid and abet this should be stripped of their license and never allowed to practice ever again. I don't care if that prevents you from having a livelihood or you went to school. I do not give a flying fuck. If you are undermining the rule of law, if you are using the law to abuse vulnerable people, you do not deserve to have the most tiny morsel of power. You certainly don't deserve a law license. We're going to leave it there, folks. More next week on One Nation Indivisible.
This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.